Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Cooking Like a Pro here at KCNR. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you taking the time out of your, well, could be drive time. You know, and we're here live at 5, but there's other ways to listen to the show. But those that are out there, please just accept our appreciation for listening. Not quite solo tonight. I got my beautiful wife, Krista, but you've found Chef Cal D. Mercurio again at Cooking Like a Pro, and my wife has an engagement, but I think she's going to join us on the phone. So
I think I'm here. Can you hear me, Chef
Cal? Nope, there she is. That's my beautiful wife.
I'm live on remote.
All right, live remote for her. So anyway, you know, last week I was talking with our special guest, and I ran down a rabbit hole and didn't get back to something that I wanted to talk about, and that's eggplant. And kind of one of the main reasons is that I try to pick these things that people have challenges with. And eggplant is, you know, I mean, you can ask somebody that eats beef if you like steak or do you like chicken. But sometimes seafood is a big one, and most of the time it's because they just haven't had good seafood. I would venture to say all of the time it's because of that, but... Well, the same thing with eggplant. The people that are generally turned off by it and that like vegetables, it's just not prepared the right way. You know, eggplant is typically described as being, you know, soggy or mushy or those sort of things. But my wife Krista made some eggplant, and I made some eggplant in several different ways. You know, within the last couple of days, and I really enjoyed the one that Krista did. It was much more complicated than the one I did. I just did the simple breading 1, 2, 3, which of course is dry, wet, dry. So flour, lightly powdered with flour after slicing it. I did put some in salt water. I didn't see that it made a difference. I tried it both ways. You know, I don't like the idea of adding salt because salt is there for one reason, which is to extract flavor. When you extract flavor, you're kind of doing the opposite of what you want, which is to keep all the flavor in. And now if it's extracting bitterness, then, you know, I could see that. But then maybe I would look at the seasonality of it. Is it at the beginning of the season, has it developed that the flavor that you want out of the eggplant, or is it older? Is it already spongy inside? So I did that there. So I did the flour, the egg mix with just a little bit of water or milk works, and then just in panko, and then just fry it at the right temperature. This is the key. It must be fried when whatever you're cooking, eggplant, fish, veal, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're cooking, if you're cooking it in a pan, it needs to begin searing when it first hits. Because if it doesn't, then you're just soaking up oil. And this is kind of why a deep frying method has gotten such a bad rap over the years. When deep frying correctly is actually really healthy because everything is locked in. But if you're not, you know, if you throw in 5 pounds of French fries and the deep fryer has to recover its temperature, it's just going to be soaking for a while. So anyway, when it comes to sauteing, in this case, it's just a quick fry on one side, fry on the other, and did a little kind of a ragu. But I'm going to talk about a variety of ways we can do eggplant. But I need my wife to explain what she did because it was quite a bit more complicated.
Well, I think first you need to talk about when you are talking about frying, you didn't deep fry it. This was a shallow fry. You just had a little bit of oil in there.
Yeah, saute.
It wasn't sitting there soaking in it. The breadcrumbs weren't getting soggy. They were very crisp. And I did not grow up with eggplant. And I've always had many times I've had it, it's been very soggy, very oily, just not to its best. Yeah, not something I want to eat.
Yeah.
So I did. I tried this week. We also need to talk about, you did the Bob Ganache. You can talk about after this.
Yeah.
I did a confit, which is C-O-N-F-I-T, confit. And confit is usually done with duck, correct? It's a preservation technique.
Yeah. It's the idea of cooking something down, yeah.
So what I did is I was using a preservation technique. This is kind of an ancient tradition of cooking where you preserve it. You either preserve in vinegar, usually, or preserve in oil, and I preserved it in oil. I went with the canola oil, and I used Chinese eggplant. Chinese eggplant is known to be a lot more tender. It's the long ones, and I simply split it lengthways.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then I did a cross-hatching on it, sprinkled a little salt, and let it dry a little bit to pull out any excess water, excess bitterness. And then I covered in oil. It was a canola oil, and everybody's probably going to freak out because it's oil, but this is an old preservation technique. It doesn't soak it in. What it does is it creates kind of a cocoon for it to just soften and cook and to preserve. And I put it in a 350-degree oven for an hour.
Yeah,
so it was really simple.
Yeah. And I think what people need to understand on that also is that, you know, it's the seed oils that you really want to stay away from. The seed oils have been processed. Vegetable oils, you know, processed, but seed oils certainly the worst on the list. And then again, you
this wasn't reaching the smoke point because it's a very high smoke point oil, and we were cooking a very low temperature, 300. It didn't even come close to breaking down.
Yeah.
And one thing,
I'm going to interrupt you real quick, is just in case people didn't know what the smoke point is, it's just that the point, it's simply just the point where the oil smokes. When the oil gets up around 400, for a little bit over 400 degrees, or it gets really dirty from maybe overuse or something, it will begin to kind of get a light, you know, smoke coming off of it. And when it gets to that point, you definitely want to stop. You want to stop. You want to throw that oil away. We highly recommend when you're cooking this way that you strain those oils to get any of those loose particles out, because those particles keep cooking. So we have this vat of oil with the eggplant, and then, but you put something else in there.
I went to Costco. I got the big packet of the already peeled garlic cloves, and I just put in handfuls of them so that it roasted in a garlic oil. And now I also have a confit of garlic, preserved garlic, that I can have anytime ready on hand to use in other dishes.
And a bunch of garlic oil also.
Yeah, so we got three things. We got confit eggplant, we got confit garlic, and we got garlic olive oil to use. So three things came out of one cooking process.
Yeah, one of the things that we used to do a lot at all our different restaurants that me and Krista had is we would add some turmeric to that. Turmeric is going to add a little bit of spice, so it is going to adjust it there, but it's going to give it this just amazingly beautiful caramel, more of a yellowish color, and it's great for garlic oil. If you've ever been to a restaurant, you've seen anything dripped on the plate that was yellow, that was garlic oil that had turmeric in it. Turmeric, of course, is the only thing that they add to mustard seeds and water, or vinegar rather, when they crush it in order to make mustard. So that's that adds that bright. But it's an Indian spice, and it's used in, I know we don't want to go off a rabbit trail here, but I mean, I know that you use it, and it's kind of like, you know, cumin or cumin. There's a lot of these different, you know, spices. I know me and Sadie talked about it. Yeah, that really have a real, you know, healing property to them.
Now, real quick, how did you make that baba ganache? That was the third thing we made with eggplant.
Yeah, that was roasted. So we had one eggplant that was a little less firm than the other, so I just simply cut it in half. I rubbed it down with some garlic and oil, a little bit of secret salt. You know, salt and pepper's fine. And roasted it off for 45 minutes and then let it cool overnight. And then you just scrape the inside of it out, and it really comes out almost like a hummus kind of a texture, but not coarse. Yeah, more creamy. And then it's just garlic, lemon juice, and a little bit of cumin. And there you got baba ganache. Baba ganache has been a favorite of mine ever since I first had it back in the 80s. I went to a food and wine pairing, actually, and had it. So that was great.
Did you mention the tahini? You seasoned it with tahini also.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. The tahini. I'm looking at my words. There it is. Tahini. Yeah. Tahini, again, is just going to be those toasted sesame seeds, which have been ground up and with a little bit of oil in them. And so it's a actually just a great flavoring if you want to add that nutty texture and component. So, but anyway, Chef Tao, we're coming up against the first break, and we are cooking like a pro, and you've got us here on KCNR 1460 AM radio and 96.5 FM. Back in this moment.
Explore the land of yin, I always take one on the chin. And now this lioness has almost made me tame. I can't reveal her name, but eggplant is her game. The lady sticks to me like white on rice.
Hey, Redding, take an inflation vacation with Black Bear Diner's 7 new weekday dinner deals, starting at just $9.99. Tasty fish tacos, creamy fettuccine carbonara, steak and fries, a crispy chicken dinner, beef stroganoff, and more. Serve Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. Escape inflation's grip on your wallet and set the table tonight with good old-fashioned family food at your friendly Black Bear Diner in Redding on Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
The official meeting of the business-to-business meeting is called to order. Business-to-business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
Well, I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
No. Business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and price right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Green vegetable eating machine. They make me strong, make me clever. They're my favorite cuisine. I'm a mean green vegetable eating machine. They make me strong, make me clever. They're my favorite cuisine.
Well, welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Cow. I'm excited that you are listening. Again, if you ever want to call in, ask a cooking question, you're able to do that at 530-605-4567. Again, that's 530-605-4567. You know, I still didn't get through my eggplant, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that just so I can finish the topic so I can move on to something else. But I think one of the things when you do the eggplant parmesan is that you need to have a really crisp eggplant, and then you also can't just cover it or mat it, we might call in French cuisine, where you just completely coat it in a sauce, because you want it to be crisp, and it's not going to be crisp if it's got a bunch of sauce soaking on top of it. But anyway, there's a variety of eggplants that are out there. We did both a baby patio eggplant. I thought that was really cool. They're small eggplants, about the size of your thumb, and they grow like tomatoes, very prolific. And you can just give yourself a little eggplant bush, you know, or plant on the back of your, you know, patio or something, and have some eggplant, fresh eggplant to deal with. Also, they're great on pizza. I also used to do eggplant and make a lasagna, like a vegetable lasagna, so it would be a vegetarian dish using eggplant in place of the pasta. So that's another thing that you can use it for. And also just barbecuing. Just season it up with some garlic and, you know, some seasoning salt or whatever, or a little bit of oil, and then just, you know, brush it down and clean your barbecue like we have in our barbecue cheat sheet. Remember, you can get that if you go to Culinarily Yours. And again, that's our website. It's got all kinds of free tools, including the everything you need to know about barbecue. So there's a sheet for that. But again, a lot of times I'll slice it, season it like I mentioned, and then grill it and then roll it with like goat cheese or something in front of it, or excuse me, inside of it. It's great for, you know, a gluten-free dish, a little bit of fresh basil in there, balsamic syrup. I almost treat it like you do like a grilled portobello, where you can take and, you know, actually make a hamburger out of your portobello. Of course, it's, you know, it's got great protein, 7 grams of protein, good fiber, you know, medium carbs, it's only 4.8. And, so, it, you know, there's lots of different things you can do. If you're Greek, you can make some moussaka. I know that was something, anytime we did a Greek dinner at the restaurant, we're featuring our baklava and our moussaka, then that was something we used. It. It's kind of a beef, eggplant, cheese casserole, I guess would be the best way to describe it. And again, ratatouille. You can't leave out ratatouille, right? Ratatouille can be chunks and served more of a chunky style, which I would call, could be served cold, could be almost a dip. Hot, it would be served kind of as a ragu, kind of like the side vegetable for something else. And, of course, you know, Ratatouille, one of the greatest movies ever in the history of movies. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about food safety. And this is just food safety. It's not going to be dry and boring. I'm not going to put on a lab coat to do this. But it's the food safety, and there's certain things I think you can look at to help make sure that you're getting the length of the shelf life of your food. You know, you're not throwing something away in 2 or 3 days where it could have been good for 4 or 5 days simply because it wasn't cooled down in the proper way. And you really want your, all your hot foods are going to be, you know, above 140. And the danger zone, or when bacteria starts growing, is between 40 and 140. So your cold food has to stay below 40, and your hot food stays above 140. So 40 and 140. And so you just want to kind of stay along that. So when you start to cool it down, you want to get it from above 140 down to 40 as soon as possible. Sometimes that's spreading it out on a pan. If it's a sauce or a soup, maybe you're just throwing some ice cubes in there and stirring those around. That will break, that will get it down really quickly. And you also don't want to take something that's hot and just think, okay, I'll put this in the fridge to cool it down. Because it will. But remember that refrigerator is running around 36, 38, maybe even 40 degrees, depending on how cold you like it. But it's running somewhere in the 40s degrees or just a little bit less than that, where bacteria is not going to grow. And then all of a sudden you're putting something hot in there, especially if it's hot and steaming. So that just raises the temperature of the refrigerator. So now everything is up in the danger zone. And it's not going to be very long, but, you know, the reality is if you have, you know, perishable items, you know, things that are bound items, like bound salads, you know, the macaroni salad, potato salad, you know, things that have protein in them that could, you know, they wouldn't just, they need to be kept below 40. So anyway, so do that there. Cool them down, a variety of ways to do that. And the other thing, just kind of to kind of keep in mind is cross-contamination. Because when you, there are basically three different ways that things can become contaminated. Again, I'm trying to make this as non textbook as possible, but the three different ways would be a biological, chemical, or physical. And to break those down, biological means somebody, you know, sneezes in it, or they got a cut on their hand, or there's been a transfer there. The second way is chemical, you know, making sure if you're using bleach. I would prefer to use vinegar. I would use any place you can use bleach, you can use vinegar. At least I have not found a place where you can't. And you're not going to vinegar, why, maybe at raising the acid level, but it dissipates probably as quickly as bleach. But then you don't have the chemical, and that's the second way of cross-contamination occurs. And then, of course, physical. I remember once we did this event. It was in Southern California, and it was an event. It was like 750 people. And we're going through it, and the salads were made, and the salads went out. And one of the salad gals that was prepping the salads came over, and she had these Lee press-on nails back when they had those. And she had this one, it was, must have been like an inch, they were all like an inch long. And she was missing one. And it was the salad that had been tossed, like with the dressing. So Lord and behold, a half hour after salads or 20 minutes after salads went out, here comes this, salad back with a Lee press-on nail in it. They didn't get upset, and they understood, but you do have to be careful of that. That's why anytime, you know, someone cuts themselves, gloves, we use gloves a lot these days, especially even more so, since COVID. I'll be honest, I was taught by probably the top, you know, sanitation and safety expert in the United States. He was amazing, and he was a very big advocate of not wearing gloves. And his reasoning, which I agree with, is that people have a glove on and they kind of forget, and they'll cross-contaminate without really thinking about it. At least if you don't have gloves on, you wash your hands in between grabbing the raw chicken and going over and grabbing the celery. So cross-contamination is a big thing. But again, vinegar as a cleaning solution, especially your cutting surfaces, your knives, all these things, you want to make sure that you keep those completely free of any bacteria. If you think about temperature, really bacteria starts dying right around that 150 temperature. So, you know, if there's any bacteria in it, you know, you bring it up above 155, 160, you know, for a matter of just a few minutes. And if there was any bacteria, that's going to kill it. But, you know, if it tastes bad, then throw it out. Okay. Cause that's the ultimate, indicator. Okay. If it tastes bad, boiling it isn't going to make it taste any better. Okay. It might kill some of the bacteria, but you're better off just tossing it when you get to that point. Other things, you know, keeping your fingernails clean. I'm obsessed with keeping my fingernails clean. And I don't know why. Well, I know why that is, because I always have. But I clean my fingernails all day long, because, you know, you get in things and you get stuff underneath your nails, and, you know, having your proper cleaners to be able to do that, big thing. Allergies is another big thing we should just touch on real quickly. Nuts is a big one. You know, I was looking that up. Over 30,000 people a year. This is in the United States. 30,000 people a year go to the ER with because of nut allergies. So it's not just the nuts that were prepared there. Remember, you're also, it's what, you know, nuts are airborne. You know, and if you're in a place where you were, you know, making peanut butter sandwiches, and all of a sudden you started making something else that was nut free or needed to be nut free, that's not going to happen. Okay, you've already been cross-contaminated just because it's an airborne thing. So people that are allergic to peanuts and other nuts are definitely allergic very often. You know, I always keep EpiPens around and things like that to be safe. But it's just something. It's just, you want to be careful. You want to just be careful when you're working with nuts. You know, biological. You know, foods need the same thing we need. So bacteria needs that same thing, rather. So, a pathogen that's growing needs food. It needs, you know, low acid, high acid, of course, vinegar would trump it. Temperature is a bad thing for it. So we want to get the temperature up there to kill it. You know, time, and it has, needs oxygen to breathe, and then also needs moisture. So just, you know, keep your foods, stored properly. Use fresh items. I always say if I wouldn't eat it, I won't send it out, you know, in a restaurant. So there's those things. And then also things like, you know, gluten intolerant or, you know, other intolerances, lactose. I'm actually lactose intolerant, which, you know, is very unfortunate simply because, I haven't had a bowl of cereal since I was probably 8. And I love the idea of cereal and ice cold milk. And I know there's other milks out there, but it just seems like cheating. I don't know. But anyway, gluten intolerance is a big thing. Got to be real, real careful of the gluten for people that, are celiac or even don't even have to be all the way celiac. And even if it's just their idea of eating more healthy, you know, that's fine as well. But, between the gluten and lactose, which is the dairy intolerance, you just want to be careful. you know, when people ask for that, make sure that you have workarounds for them, you know, whether it's a different type of cracker that's made out of rice instead of wheat and those kind of things. So anyway, we're coming up to the break at the bottom here. You've reached Chef Cal. You've got me on here at KCNR, cooking like a pro. So, please call in if you'd like to. Again, 530-605-4567. Or you can reach us at cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Right, be back right after the break.
Turtle Bay Exploration Park and Dutch Bros Coffee presents Caffeinate for a Cause, back for its 12th annual year. Stop by any local Dutch Bros location on Thursday, September 19th, from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. in support of Turtle Bay's exhibitions and educational programming. $1 from every drink sold plus tips will be donated to Turtle Bay. You never know, you could get a chance to meet one of our Turtle Bay animal ambassadors. Don't miss Caffeinate for a Cause, Thursday, September 19th, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Fall is the best time of the year to plant trees and shrubs. The nights are cooler and the ground is still warm, and this allows the roots to take hold and gives the plants a good start. Starting September 6th through the 21st, Gold Leaf Nursery's Big Fall Sale begins. Take advantage of their fall sale prices, and what a sale it's going to be. 40% off all 1 gallon through 24-inch box trees. Take 40% off all 1 gallon through 15-gallon shrubs, vines, and ground cover. The nursery is loaded with beautiful plants, shrubs, trees, perennials, and ground cover. Their roses, crepe myrtles, and verbenas are in bloom. They have a tasty selection of fruit trees and citrus with over 1,000 in stock and on sale. Come in and take advantage of this big fall sale. 40% off all shrubs and trees, 1 gallon or larger. Now in stock. Fall vegetable and fall color. Gold Leaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course and a quarter mile from Airport Road. Don't miss the big fall sale at Gold Leaf Nursery.
This is the night, it's a beautiful night, and we call it a bella notte. Look at the skies, they have stars in their eyes, on this lovely bella notte.
Welcome back. This is KCNR, Cooking Like a Pro. This is Chef Cal, just sharing an hour of food with you. We appreciate you listening, and be sure to turn your friends on to it too, if they'd like to listen, if they're interested in food. Again, we cover a little bit of pretty much anything that is food related, restaurant related, industry related, that kind of thing. And I did want to mention, I was working last night with an organic pasta. I guess this would be a shout out to Trader Joe's. But when we're talking about things that have not been overly processed, things that don't have a bunch of additives in there, when you have a meal of some sort and you look on it and not only are there four or five things you can't pronounce, you don't even know what they're in there for, and they're just added to the other 15 ingredients that are in there. But this pasta here was a fusilli. It's just the round. It's, you see a lot in pasta salads. Fusilli, buca pasta. This was a macaroni product that was from Italy, imported into Trader Joe's. And it was just two ingredients. That's it. Just semolina and water. So, and it was organic, so it was grown correctly. So it was organic durum wheat, which durum wheat just means it's a little less ground so it's not ground so much. And when you, the more you grind something, the more you're just taking something out of it. You just, that just, that's the kind of the best way to look at it. And then, so along with the organic semolina, it just was water and it came out great. I really enjoyed it. My son enjoyed it. I actually made a mac and cheese on it. So don't get me wrong. I know it's organic. I wasn't going healthy. I was going mac and cheese, but anyway, hey, shout out to them. You can get a lot of things. I think that, you know, from whatever your stores are there, and I'm not going to sit here and prompt any particular stores, and, you know, unless they became a sponsor, but, you know, you really want to get away from plastic. And I know that I talked about it with Chef Sadie last week. It's just all this stuff that's wrapped in plastic. It gets into the food. So just bear that in mind when you go. Of course, farmers markets, or one place, or places where things are just, you know, presented in, you know, bushel baskets. You know, that's one way to look at it. But I did want to talk a little bit about, sauces. Sauces are so easy, and you can modify them to go gluten free. You can modify them to go, low calorie. You can modify them to be just as rich, and thick as you want. You just have to learn them. And once you learn them and get those down, remember, I went through a French apprenticeship program, so we were taught everything from scratch. But then you see all of these, different, items, convenience products, things that have just been invented since, you know, back in the day. Stocks is a great example. You know, we used to cook a chicken stock, and you take the chicken feed and roast it with vegetables and throw them in the pot, and that sucker could go for 8 hours. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes it almost became like a garbage can. You know, hey, you got some leftover tomatoes and stuff. Well, you got to remember, celery becomes bitter when you cook too long, and so do other sulfuric things. So, you know, your stock pot is not a garbage can, okay? You want your mirepoix, again, your carrots, onion, celery. You want your bouquet garni, your parsley, bay leaf, and thyme. You might change that carrot out if you're making something light-colored. Let's say you're going to make a cream of chicken soup. If you want to make a nice creamy chicken soup and add some rice to it or something, you're not going to want that carrot pigmentation in there. I mean, you put carrots in it, but don't use them in the stock, because then your whole, because you want it to be a lighter color, especially to say you're going to do a cream of mushroom soup. Then I'd probably omit the carrots and just replace that with equal amount of leek. So that would be the way the French would do it. That's the way I do it. And that's the way that works. So your mushroom soup doesn't look, you know, maybe as dark as it could. It, you know, most of these vegetable soups are cream soups. So the cream's gonna lighten them up as well. But when we walk down the sauces, remember there's always five. There's only five you need to worry about. And they all go by color. Okay. My wife's not on the phone. So I don't know if this is on our website. If it isn't, we'll get it on there, because I think that's where I pulled it from. But she just labeled it sauce pedigree. So you've got your five sauces. Again, just take your hand, and if you still got five fingers, each hand is a sauce. So we got by color: white, brown, red, yellow, blonde. Again, white, brown, red, yellow, blonde. So now let's walk through these, because you're aware of these. You see these almost daily in your meals and your eating, especially if you go out to eat. A white sauce is just a white roux. It's usually half milk or cream, but I would use milk. Why spend the extra money on cream? You can always finish things off with cream, you know, to get that creamy coating over your mouth. But don't spend the money, you know, too early on this. So it's half milk and half poultry stock. So half milk, half poultry stocks. We talked about our cream soups can fall into this category as well, but they also fall under one of the other ones I'll mention in a second. So you have a white roux, which is, your roux are just, there's three different types of roux: white, blonde, and brown. The roux coincide with the sauces: white roux, white sauce, blonde roux, blonde sauce, brown roux, brown sauce. So that's pretty simple math on that one. So white, brown, and blonde. So you cook the roux. You melt your butter, add your flour, mix it up. It's not cooked. It's just mixed. It looks like Play-Doh. It is the consistency of Play-Doh. You've all had we've all probably played with Play-Doh. You add that to your sauce slowly, one little spoonful or teaspoon at a time, slowly whisking to, so you don't get any lumps. And that's what's going to tighten this up. The more you cook the roux, which is flour and butter, the more you cook it, the more starch you take out of it. So the white roux is going to be very starchy. So when you add white roux to your, you know, half milk, half stock, you're going to come up with something that needs to cook in order to get that flour taste out. That flour taste is that, you know, that kind of stick to the roof of your mouth taste. Yeah, maybe some consider it kind of more of an aspirin thing. But you don't want that in your sauce. So your white sauce, which you've made, and you thicken that up, and now that's called a bechamel. So you just learned the first one, the white sauce, white roux, white stock with milk and stock equals mother sauce. All right, so let's go to the blonde one because it's fairly similar. It's a blonde roux, so your roux is cooked a little more, so it won't have to cook as long in the sauce. So that's a good thing. But a lot of people will thicken with what's called a slurry or a whitewash. Whitewash would be flour and butter. Flour and oil, and then your slurry would be cornstarch and water. So cornstarch and water, flour and water. So that's a slurry, again, and a whitewash. Whitewash with flour, slurry with cornstarch. And so those are not going to be cooked out very well. So they're going to have to be cooked out while they're in the sauce. But that is what we call a blonde roux. So it's lightly cooked on the stovetop. We're going to add it again, a tablespoon or so at a time. We're going to add that into a white stock, which is either poultry stock, fish stock, veal stock. We've talked about convenience items. This is where you go to the store and you get your beef base, your chicken base, your fish base, your clam base, or whatever. Or you make your own. You know, get a bunch of clam shells and throw them in with some garlic, onions, celery, bay leaf, thyme, and let it cook down. And then you got this beautiful clam broth that you can use. So you can make it that way if you have the product. If you have leftover lobster shells or leftover lamb bones or leftover salmon carcass or leftover beef bones or chicken bones. So we're going to take this, again, go back to the blonde sauce. We're adding a blonde roux to one of these stocks, fish, veal, or chicken. And then we got what's called, instead of a bechamel sauce, now we got a velouté sauce. Velouté sauces are probably the number one sauce where cream soups, cream vegetable soups come from. Cream of broccoli. Could be cream of cheddar. Could be cream of cauliflower, cream of eggplant, cream of carrot, cream of anything under the sun, cream of zucchini. So that's where you get your cream. So, and so that's a mother sauce, okay, which you can add and make that into a soup as well. Now we're going to keep cooking our flour until it gets brown. We're going to add that into a brown stock, a beef stock. We're going to cook that out. The brown roux won't take as long because that starch has been cooked out. And we have what we call a brown sauce, or a Espanol sauce is what the French would call it. If you take this sauce, which is still fairly thin, and you reduce it by half, then you have a demi sauce. Demi is the French word for half. So it's a sauce that's been reduced down to half. And it's just going to have beautiful flavor. And that's something you want to strain through, you know, your wife's pantyhose or a coffee strainer, or, I mean, something that's really going to, cheesecloth, you know, works well as well. And then we're going to go to tomatoes. Tomato sauce is just tomatoes. You can add your aromatics to that and let that cook down with your parsley, bay leaf, and thyme, and your vegetables, and your, you know, your garlic and your onions and stuff. And you cook that down. So tomatoes plus your water-based flavored stock. We would call a flavored vegetable stock a vegetable, what was that called? Concasse, I think. Something like that. But anyway, so that would be your stock, and then you have your tomato sauce. And then your last one, we were not going to touch on much because it's kind of off on its own. It's actually emulsified sauce, so it uses clarified butter and egg yolks, and you get hollandaise. But the last thing I wanted to touch on is you got all these mother sauces, bechamel, velouté, espagnol or brown sauce, red sauce or tomato sauce, hollandaise or yellow sauce, and you add ingredients to that. And that takes a mother sauce and takes it into a sister sauce. So there is some, it does make sense, okay? Once you've done it a few times, you'll get that down if you haven't already. And, for example, you have a tomato sauce and you add, you know, brown sugar, cider vinegar, and mustard, and you have barbecue sauce, right? You add bell pepper, garlic, onions, and mushrooms, and you have Italian sauce, or what we call marinara sauce. You add Parmesan cheese to bechamel, and you get Alfredo sauce. Any cheese will make it a cheese sauce. So there's, you know, with the brown sauce, add mushrooms and marsala, white wine and garlic and shallots. You got marsala sauce, or you can make scallopini. Take your hollandaise, add your tarragon vinegar, and you have béarnaise sauce. So we're going to take one last break here. Thanks for tuning in to Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be right back on KCNR, 1460 AM.
Bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities are Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander, wherever I roam, I couldn't be...
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Cellars. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
That's amore.
When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
That's amore.
Bells will ring.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Oh, Dino, he does it so well. Boy, he was so smooth, wasn't he? Man, I'm kind of wondering how many, what percentage of my audience here at Cooking Like a Pro on KCNR actually knows who Dean Martin is. I really hope that the majority, I mean, I want younger people to listen, but you know, I mean, hey, Dino, Frank, you know, all these guys, they're all going to come back and, you know, everything goes in a circle, right? And I think the food does too. My last restaurant, we did chicken and dumplings and, you know, meatloaf and, you know, pot roast and roasted game hen. And these were things that a large part of our guests had no idea what they were. So they weren't raised with that. So that's sad, but we've also talked about that in the past. But, I'm working on a cookbook. Okay. I may have mentioned that before. So I don't know when it's coming out, but we're working on it. It seems nonstop. So there's just a variety of things and stories that I've just been, reminding me of things in the past. You know how you start remembering back and it's like, you know, you remember those pleasant things and some of them, you know, not so pleasant. But it is something that I really enjoy. And I know that when I started, for example, I was only 9 years old. And I was coming home, and Mom always had that Post-it note. And I think I mentioned this before, but that Post-it note was always on the fridge. And then she had these instructions on what to do, like put the casserole in and turn the crock pot on and, you know, get some water hot for the vegetables and whatever it was. So I just enjoyed doing that. And, even, you know, cooking pasta. I mean, all you had to do when you were in my house, to know that we enjoyed ourselves cooking was stand in front of the stove and look up, because the ceiling was covered with spaghetti. Because it was just how I was taught. The spaghetti is done when it sticks to the ceiling, you know? And, you know, the idea, of course, or the thought or the reason, I guess, is that, you know, when the starch starts coming out of the pasta becomes more sticky and sticks to the roof, which is what you want, right? You don't want it all inside the, I mean, you want al dente. Remember, the term al dente means to the tooth. So you're biting in, and there's a slight resistance between your teeth, and then your teeth break through. So it's not soft and mushy, and it's not hard and crunchy. It's in between that. But on the fridge was kind of, you know, where it started. And then when we went on further on and then competing in the early 90s, I started competing in the early 80s, actually late 70s. It would enter any food competition I could find. A chili cook-off, or it didn't really matter. But I just competed, and then I competed for, you know, decades. And then eventually got to a point where I was able to make it to the Olympic team in 93, and then work on that. And there's tons of stories. So that's going to be a big part of the cookbook. And we got David on line one. David, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in to Cooking Like a Pro.
This show is incredible.
Well, thank you.
And I tell you what, being able to go back and listen to that part about the different roux and stuff, I'm going to go back to that several times. I love that this is archived, that you can go back and check it all again. It's also archived on your website, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, my wife takes it the next day and archives it for the to kind of fulfill that podcast part of what it is that we do. But, I enjoy
it. Incredible show. I just want to say thanks so much.
All right. Well, thanks, Dave. I appreciate you calling in. You have a wonderful day. All right. Well, that was great. Yeah. Kudos. Thanks, Dave. You made my day. You know, and that's the thing about calling in. If you have, there is, I'll tell you right now, I've been doing this for, you know, well, 5 decades, but I've taught my entire life as well, in everything from kindergarten all the way up to elderly folks and everything in between, including 17 years of college and those sort of things. So there, I'll tell you right now, there's no such thing as a stupid question, because if there's something that you don't want to call because you think it's stupid, I guarantee you there's a bunch of other people out there wondering the same thing. And that's why when I teach, I always teach from, the basic lowest common denominator, because I don't want to pass anybody up. If I'm talking about making tomato sauce, but somebody is really uncomfortable with maybe understanding part of the process, I am going to go through that process meticulously. And this is one of the things that raises my blood pressure. And that's watching, Food Network. I've talked about this in the past where I'm looking at it and I'm just thinking, yeah, they're not going to be able to replicate that. And I want the food to really just stand out and to be the best that it possibly can. If that dish to just have everything that it could have added for the enjoyment of the guests. And I see that not happen continuously. Very seldom do I ever see it not happen. And I'm not saying that because of, you know, any type of an ego thing. I'm be as humble as I can. It's just that I know there's a better way because I've done it the wrong way probably more times than not. And I'm not sure how many of those stories we're going to get. But, yes, I remember, the thing about competing is it allowed me when I made the Olympic team. And again, this is 93. I competed in the 96 Olympics, the 2000 Olympics, and 2004 Olympics. Again, they started in 1900 even. The Olympics, Food Olympics, always held in Europe, and they happen every 4 years, like the Sporting Olympics. I know I tell people I won an Olympic gold medal. It comes up in conversation, and I get asked. And and they first look at me like what? Short, but, you know, I'm 5'7" and 190 pounds. I mean, I don't look like somebody that's going to be breaking any records on much of anything. Sometimes I'll joke and tell them the shot put. But anyway, so there are the Culinary Olympics. And when I started there, it took about $250,000, about $250 million all three times we went. And I was in charge of most of the financing of being able to do events and raise money. So we did all kinds of events. One that stand, well, a lot of them, I mean, dozens of them stand out. One with Paul Pacus. I mean, we're talking about a chef that's so famous. He's passed away now, but that's so famous that as chefs, all we need to see is his silhouette and you know it's him. But just a variety of just wonderful, masters that have gone before us. You know, I think of Michel Richard. I've talked about him. Charlie Trotter, of course. But being able to do these events, I look back at the, one that we did, and it's called the Meadows Dinner. And it's for the Meadows School. It's a school down outside of Las Vegas. And when you walk through this school, we didn't always get to go and see, you know, what the events that we were doing and raising money for, what they were. We weren't a part of that very often. This time we were. They took us, all of us chefs, to the school, the Meadow School. And when you walk down the hallway, I remember there was not a place on the wall on either side of this school that wasn't floor to ceiling, certificates and awards. And these people, these kids were either the best in the state or best in the country in whatever it was their task was. And it was just amazing. And the kindergartners actually played Hail to the Chief or Hail to the Chef. Because this particular dinner, the executive chef of the White House, Henry Holler, we lost him about 4 years ago, but he was, might have been a little longer than that, but he was, like the grand, you know, chef spokesperson for the event. So we were replicating dishes out of his cookbook. It's called the White House Cookbook. Chef Henry Holler was in the White House. He spanned, 5 different presidential administrations: Ford, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, and Johnson. And I just remember being down at this event and seeing all these things, like the kids playing Hail to the Chief on, with wooden spoons banging on pots and pans. I mean, we want to talk about cool, but this place was so big. I don't know, most people wouldn't know this unless they went there, but the MGM Grand and Treasure Island are connected underneath. So this event, I was running the event. I needed a golf cart to get from place to place. It was just, there were ice carvings and smoke and dancing ladies and everything. And the meal was just top notch. I don't even know what they were charging per person, maybe $500. I can't even remember how many people it was. I mean, it was hundreds. I know that much, but it was just a blast. I remember getting this call and I'm, doing whatever. And it's like, hey, chef, we need you down here at the loading dock. So I jump on the golf cart. I go down the loading dock and when they ship live shellfish, soft shell crabs, lobsters from Maine, they ship them in seaweed because they ship them alive because you need them alive. And so we get all these lobsters that I ordered and they're all from Maine, and the crate broke when they dropped them on the loading dock. So when I get down there, there's lobsters everywhere. They're crawling all over the place. And there's a couple guys that are working there, on the dock and me, and we're all just running around grabbing lobsters. They're kind of, you know, scurrying around. You know, they don't go real fast, but you know, when you got a few hundred lobsters, you know, but something. But those are the kind of things that you think about, and they make the event, they make it exciting, they create what food is supposed to create, right? Food is, in my opinion, food is meant to create two things: emotion, and then that story that's behind that. So those are the two things that, I guess the story behind it, we would say memories, right? So it creates these things that we're able to look back on in life and say, wow, that was fantastic. I remember that wedding and I remember that birthday and that anniversary and good things and bad things, and just things evolve around food. And it's just one of those central connecting points that I think that we can use. And again, it's something you have to do all the time. Why not have fun doing it? Why not enjoy it to the fullest? And that's something that you're always going to hear me you know, preach from my pulpit here or my soapbox or whatever you want to call it, because I really think that we should enjoy something that we have to do that much of. And this is our one time around, right? We all have two things. We all have a purpose and we all have an expiration date. So let's get up every day and enjoy that purpose. And when that purpose comes to food, go out and search out the best product. Get ideas. You know, we didn't have internet when I started, so you've got a big advantage to that. These days you just pick something up. But anyway, enjoy it. Have fun. If you ever have questions, jot them down. Again, you can always send those to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Again, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. I will personally get back to you and answer those as well on air. And thank you so much for joining us here today at Cooking Like a Pro. Again, KCNR 1460.